Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traina here with you. It is Tuesday, February 11, 2020. We're getting oh so close to the combine. Cannot wait to get out to Indianapolis, hear what the players have to say, put the ear to the ground, see if we can pick up some early rumors and whatnot, especially with free agency just around the corner. It'll be here before we know it. Before we get there, though, we still have a few shows we need to get through. And on today's program, we are going to do part two of the ultimate NFC East crossover. And on today's program, Marcus Mosier, who is the host or one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Cowboys podcast, is going to lead the way, the round table. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Cowboys and what they've been up to and how they might affect, you know, their new coaching staff, what effect that might have on them, and how the rest of the NFC East might stack up as far as the chances they have. So that is coming up in segments two and three. And in this segment, what I wanted to do is I wanted to touch base with you guys about mock drafts. Now, normally I've been talking about mock drafts on Monday. Didn't do it yesterday, unfortunately, because quite honestly, I didn't have all my data in front of me. Now that I do, let's go ahead and talk about that. So as I go through the internet and I look at the various mock drafts, and you know, it's interesting. I know I always say that it's kind of early to talk mock drafts, that, you know, a lot can change. Let's see who does what in the combine and pro days, and let's see how free agency shakes out and everything. But if there's one position that I feel the Giants absolutely positively have got to address, and ideally in the first round, that is offensive tackle. Now, I've thought about this for a moment because there are some who believe that the Giants need to get a playmaking stud on defense. And I don't disagree with that. The Giants need playmakers on defense. What they also need, though, is they need to take a look at how they were using some of the guys last year on the defense and determine if they were using those guys to their fullest potential. And, you know, just on a quick glance, and this is probably something for later on in the film study, I'm not so sure that was always the case. Now, with that said, the Giants could definitely use another pass rusher. Absolutely. But here's the problem. If you are going to stay at number four, if you're going to even drop down to number six, you better make sure that if you take a pass rusher, that that pass rusher is going to be good for double-digit sacks. Now, a Chase Young, I think he would be good for double-digit sacks. I mean, he is a one-of-a-kind freak of nature, an incredible athlete. I could see him potentially giving whatever team gets him double-digit sacks. I don't think that he's going to fall down to the Giants at number four if they stay there. I think Washington's going to scoop him up, and the Giants, unfortunately, are going to have to face him a couple times a year. So that leads me to what I think the Giants should do. And that is they should look to get an offensive tackle. Now, when we talk about value, when we talk about, you know, the right move, let's consider a few things. Number one, I do believe that the Giants are going to look to get an offensive tackle in free agency. I think I would be shocked if they don't make a beeline towards Jack Conklin if he is not retained by Tennessee. I think That's would be, you know, a no-brainer for the Giants. Now, if you get Jack Conklin in, he can play, you know, right tackle. Now, here's the next thing you have to ask yourself. Do you get a veteran at right tackle, or do you say to yourself, you know what, we're going to be in a position to draft a tackle, so let's do that instead. Let's put the number four overall pick into the starting lineup. And maybe, you know, if that number four overall pick is a left tackle, maybe now you move Nate Solder from left tackle over to the right side. And I think the more I think about it, Number one, if you draft an offensive tackle, that's the guy who's going to be on the field for you every snap. Whereas a defender, maybe not always every snap. You know, you'll probably get him on the field for the majority of the snaps, but I don't know that you'll get him on the field for every single snap. An offensive tackle. Now, here's the thing. The Giants obviously do not want to be drafting in the top 10 every year. They don't want to be drafting in the top 5 every year because obviously that means that they are not doing well. So they have an opportunity now, after having an opportunity the last couple of years, to get a franchise running back and a franchise quarterback, to get a franchise left tackle. And I think they would be doing themselves a disservice if they don't explore that, they don't consider that. This is a deep class for offensive tackles. And I think even if the Giants were to trade down, you know, with a quarterback needy team, which by the way, I still am hoping that they do. I think it would make a lot of sense to try and do that, especially now that the Chargers have declared that they are moving on from Phillip Rivers and they're going to be in the market for a quarterback. And if they just so happen to like Tua, who is the quarterback that Miami is reportedly interested in drafting, why not create a little competition there and see if one of those teams is willing to move up to number 4. I think if the Giants move down to number 5 or number 6 in the draft order, they will still have an opportunity to get an offensive tackle because obviously, if you look at the top of the draft, Cincinnati is likely going to go Joe Burrow. Washington is likely going to go Chase Young. Detroit is a little bit of the wild card. I'm wondering if they go cornerback or maybe they even go wide receiver. So they're a little bit of a wild card there. They could also conceivably trade down. Who knows? I mean, it's just really, you know, they're the wild card, I think. Now, if assuming Detroit stays put and exercises their pick, then you have the Giants who can create intrigue and competition for that fourth spot. Because again, if if Los Angeles, the Chargers, if they are interested in Tua, which I don't know if they are or not. I mean, I don't think that's come out. I'd have to go back and research that. But if they have interest in Tua and they are willing to leapfrog over Miami to the Giants spot, then perhaps they can, the Giants, that is, can convince Miami to swap places with them. And what would it take to do that? Well, for the Miami to move up, if I'm the Giants, I would take, obviously, Miami's, you know, first-round pick, which would be number 5 overall. And then I would see about potentially getting a third-round pick, which, if you think about it, it's only 2 spots after where the Giants were supposed to draft had they not traded that pick away to obtain Leonard Williams via the draft. So that was definitely a scenario that intrigues me. Now, I don't know if that will happen. I know Dave Gettleman has never traded down since he has been an NFL GM. There is always a first time for everything, so we will see if he does that. You know, obviously at the combine last year, that's where some of the trade talks started to materialize. You know, the Giants, of course, trading at the time with Cleveland, the Odell Beckham Jr. trade, the Olivier Vernon trade. So we'll see what comes of it when we get to the combine in a couple of weeks. That's certainly going to be interesting because that's where you're going to find all 32 NFL GMs and head coaching staffs and whatnot, and not to mention agents. All the agents are going to be there. So there's a lot that can be done in terms of preliminary discussions and whatnot. So we'll see. I think it's going to be very intriguing, but I do like the fact that, you know, the mock drafts, a lot of mock drafts now are starting to go offensive tackle. I think that is the best way for the Giants to go. Again, doesn't mean that they should not try and get a defensive pass rusher. I think they will try to get a defensive pass rusher, but for sure, look to get the offensive tackle because you hopefully will not be this high in the draft order again once you add a few more pieces. All right, folks, stay tuned. In segment 2, we're going to kick off part 2 of our week-long NFC East ultimate crossover show. And again, Marcus Mosier of the Locked On Cowboys podcast, he's going to lead the program. And just for the rest of the week, just so you know, Wednesday is the Giants segment, so I'm going to lead that one. Thursday will be Washington segment. And then on Friday, we're going to do a general roundtable, just kind of looking ahead. So we hope you enjoy it. And we will be right back after a short break. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Giants is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Giant fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Giant fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on Locked On Giants podcast. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to the Ultimate NFC East crossover edition of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm joined today by Patricia Trainer of Locked On Giants, Louis DiBiase of Locked On Eagles, and Chris Russell of Locked On Redskins to talk about the Dallas Cowboys in 2019 and going forward into the 2020 season. Let's go ahead and first start with the big news out of Dallas. The Cowboys made a coaching change going from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy. I'm curious to hear what your guys' opinion was of that move. Patricia, let's start with you. You guys actually hired Jason Garrett. What were your feelings on the Cowboys moving on from Garrett and hiring McCarthy?
I guess I was surprised. I mean, well, maybe not so much surprised because, you know, Jason Garrett had been there as the head coach for 10 years, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had been the offensive coordinator for a few years thereafter. And really, he never really got them over the hump. Now, is that because he didn't have the talent? Is it because he got stale with what he was doing? I think it could have been a combination of all of the above. And, you know, with Mike McCarthy, you know, he's a proven winner. He's won a Super Bowl. He runs a system that I think might be a better fit for the talent down there in Dallas, especially on offense. So I'm very curious to see how it all comes together.
I'll jump in here. This is Chris Russell from Locked On Redskins. I think, you know, McCarthy probably got a bad rap a little bit in Green Bay. Everybody's always going to side with the star quarterback, I think, right? But we all know how prickly Aaron Rodgers can be. So I think McCarthy sitting back, kind of taking that year off to recharge his battery, spend some time with his family. I know in talking to a buddy of mine, Jim Haslett, who spent some time with him over the offseason, you know, they went to Cincinnati, you know, where Haslett was kind of based. And they had all these, you know, film sessions, and they talked about the league, and they studied the league, and they watched film of the league, and they met with Pro Football Focus, and they did some analytics stuff to, you know, better prepare each one of those guys that were in those think tank sessions, and specifically McCarthy for the you know, Dallas situation. You know, I think you live and you learn, right? You understand how to fix things maybe that you did wrong that have been kind of gnawing at you. So I'm always like one of these, you know, I'd rather hire a recycled head coach. If you would call McCarthy a recycled head coach, I wouldn't, because he's had an opportunity to learn and process what he did right and what he did wrong over a successful run, a largely successful run in Green Bay.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I mean, for me, I don't hate the hire. It wasn't one that I think is going to really excite a lot of people. And maybe that's what surprised me, that Jerry Jones didn't go for, or maybe he did, who knows? But like, again, this isn't a hire that's going to kill the team for sure. Mike McCarthy, like you guys said, a proven winner. He's won a Super Bowl. He has worked with some great quarterbacks, of course, like Aaron Rodgers. I was expecting heading into the offseason, like, okay, Jerry Jones is going to go all in for a Lincoln Riley, right? Or an Urban Meyer. So I don't know. Big name. I was maybe a little bit surprised that Jerry Jones kind of went with the, I don't want to call it a safe move, but he kind of made the, I don't know, not a, like a crazy big splash.
Well, I was going to say the reason why he went with a McCarthy rather than one of those, you know, Urban Meyer, Lincoln Riley, is he felt like this team wasn't that far away. They didn't need to rebuild this entire roster. They just felt like they needed to retool. And that's, for the most part, I agree, because this team was a very talented team who, you know, they basically had a playoff game against Philadelphia in week 16, and they just weren't able to get the players up for it. So, you know, they believe with a couple tweaks on offense and maybe some scheme changes on defense, they can be right back in the playoffs and be a contender in the NFC. Do you guys see that as a possibility with the Cowboys as soon as 2020?
Absolutely. I mean, now the Cowboys have some questions that they have to resolve. For example, what are they going to do with Dak Prescott? That contract is hanging over their heads. Are they going to be able to afford Amari Cooper? That's hanging over their head. And I think those are significant questions. And if I'm not mistaken, don't they have another one of their receivers is a free agent, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Randall Cobb's a free agent as well.
So they have some decisions to make. You know, the core of the team is going to be, I think, in place for the most part, but it's these additional players that, you know, are kind of the decorative part, if you will, that they have to make decisions on. And I don't know if they're going to have enough resources to accommodate everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would say this again. I think when you have the kind of talent that the Dallas Cowboys have, and we all recognize that they have talent, to me, it does. Even though there's going to be some changes, and Patricia just kind of talked about them, so for the sake of time, I'm not going to, you know, kind of reemphasize them. But there are going to be changes to right each one of our squads that we cover on a daily basis. There are certainly going to be changes to the Dallas Cowboys. But when you're this talented, for the most part, when your core is that tied up and invested and for the most part invested well, I think all it takes is a little tweak here and a tweak there. You don't have a massive salvage operation here. You don't have a massive blow up operation. Even the Redskins don't have that coming off of a 3-win year. Certainly the Cowboys don't have it. So I think if Mike McCarthy truly knows what, again, he did right, what he did wrong in Green Bay, how, you know, and of course the situation with Dak Prescott remains to be seen how they handle that. I mean, I don't see him going anywhere, but I guess there's this wacky Michael Irvin rumor as we discuss this. You know, I just think it's not going to take a whole lot to get the Cowboys going in the right direction.
No, I'm with you. I think they're very talented across the board. It's just they are in a weird spot because they have a lot of decisions to make on some core pieces like Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, you know, Byron Jones on the other side as well. And you bring in a new head coach. But if they are, for the most part, what they were last year, still with that offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott, I think they're going to be right in the fold. I don't think the NFC is, there's a lot of teams that are normally in the hunt, but there aren't. It isn't a conference where I'm like, all right, here are the top six and boom, Dallas just has no opportunity. As long as there's not major turnover where Dak Prescott is elsewhere and Amari Cooper is elsewhere, they're going to be playing, you know, for the NFC East late in the season, just like they normally are. So it is a unique spot though, because they do have some decisions to make on which guys they want to financially commit to.
Hey, Marcus, I want to ask you, speaking of which, Michael Irvin apparently has said that he heard that maybe there was a possibility of Dak moving on and Tom Brady coming in. I mean, I found that to be just
for the offseason.
I was like, whoa, man, that would be something. I mean, what are you hearing about that?
Yeah, so the truth of the story is Michael Irvin was in Miami for the Super Bowl, and he was around some former Dallas Cowboys who I wouldn't say have a role with the team, but are close to Jerry Jones. And they were more theorizing the potential of the Cowboys doing a move like that. I can tell you inside the Cowboys front office, that's absolutely not a conversation they have. Mike McCarthy took this job because he believes he can turn Dak Prescott into an elite quarterback. That's just something that's not very realistic. It's a fun story to talk about in the beginning of February when there's nothing else going on. But it's not something I anticipate happening at all. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we're actually going to talk a little bit about Dak Prescott and his future with the Dallas Cowboys. All right, we are back here at the Ultimate NFC East Crossover Edition of the Locked On Cowboys, Locked On Giants, Locked On Eagles, and Locked On Redskins podcast. I want to talk about Dak Prescott from a perspective from the division rivals. It's pretty clear here in Dallas that the Cowboys are going to give Prescott an extension worth, you know, probably $35, $36 million. Patricia, we'll start with you. As a Giants fan, does that seem too expensive for Prescott? How do you feel about the Cowboys potentially locking up Prescott for the foreseeable future?
Hey, I say go for it. I mean, if the Giants can upgrade their talent to where they're not letting quarterbacks like Dak Prescott run wild and have all that day back there to throw, go ahead, spend that salary cap money. That's less money you're going to have to keep your talent down the line and get other pieces. But no, seriously, I mean, Dak Prescott is an interesting player. He's developed. He's come a long way. I'm still not so sure, with all apologies to Cowboys fans here, but I'm still not so sure they can go all the way with him. But certainly, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what effect Mike McCarthy has on him and how his system brings the most out of Prescott.
I'll jump in here on a Redskins perspective. I mean, guys, you know, that again can extend the play, like Tony Romo used to just break the backs of the Washington Redskins time and time and time again until they just found a way on that Monday night game back in 2014 to just send heat-seeking missiles at him and just beat him to a pulp. You know, they have not been able to get that necessarily, that beat on Dak Prescott. He always finds a way to, much like Carson Wentz against the Redskins, and maybe this is just more the Redskins than Carson Wentz and or Dak Prescott, he just finds a way to beat their coverage and break them down on a third and 12 when you're putting all sorts of pressure on him, or he'll sneak out the back door, you know, or they'll run a play action boot in the red zone, and he just finds a way again to kind of break their backs a little bit. So to me, I've always been of the thought, look, do I want to pay my quarterback $35 million a year and the requisite salary cap hits? No, I don't want to do that. But we all, I think, understand, I think we all understand, that you cannot win with a bad quarterback.
Absolutely.
You cannot win with a mediocre quarterback, I don't think, on a consistent basis. And especially when you get in the playoffs, I think Tennessee, you know, kind of eventually found that out, right? When they ran into a brick wall against Kansas City because Tannehill couldn't do anything. To me, like, Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but I'd rather have a good quarterback even if I'm overpaying.
Yeah, I agree. I'm one of the guys that, as long as I don't have an elite quarterback, I'm always going to keep looking for one. That's easier said than done because, you know, Chris, like you said, if you don't even have a good one, odds are sustained success is just not possible. So it's kind of an interesting spot with Dak Prescott. Like, you know, you look at Kirk Cousins in Minnesota with how strong that roster is. That's a spot that I would eventually, if I'm Minnesota, I would get antsy and want to upgrade. Same with San Francisco and Jimmy Garoppolo. Those are guys I think you can win with. I don't know if they're guys you can always win because of. I think Dak Prescott is, I don't think he's a top tier quarterback, but I don't think he's certainly in that category either. I mean, there were some games this year against Philadelphia, didn't throw a touchdown at 56% completion percentage, against the Bears, against the Patriots. There were games this year where he struggled in big moments, but for the most part, I love having a quarterback that can run, that can extend plays. And when, you know, it's hard to really complain when a guy throws for almost 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns and with just 11 picks. So I don't want to say I think Dak Prescott's Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins in that kind of category, the Teddy Bridgewaters of the world. But I also don't think he's quite to the level of a tier one quarterback yet, maybe. I mean, and who knows? He could get to that point, but I don't know. That's kind of where my head's at with Dak Prescott.
Yeah, and here's something.
Go ahead, Patricia. Oh, go ahead.
The thing to remember with quarterbacks, and this is the argument that I made a lot, and I know Giant fans, a lot of them didn't agree with me on this, but what is the role of the quarterback? to throw the ball. He's not a runner. You don't want a guy who, you know, can't read defenses as well. And so he compensates for taking off, you know, taking off with the ball and whatnot. He's got to be able to read defenses. He's got to be able to throw the ball. And, you know, Dak Prescott has done a better job at that. He's gotten better at that. But, you know, I just think sometimes that people get, they fall too in love with the mobile quarterbacks, and they, you know, because they're exciting and they can, you know, run the ball and they're up there in the rushing yard leaders. But the end of the day, they have to be able to throw the ball and they have to be able to make plays with their arms.
Yeah, we'll finish up with this. You know, one of the things that you need to have in a young quarterback is you need to play well against your division. And while there's certainly been games for Prescott, you know, you can point to the Eagles game this year, the basically the play-in game that he hasn't played well. For the most part, he's done an excellent job. 18-6 in his 24 games in the division, 45 total touchdowns, 11 interceptions. He has played well in this division. And the hope is with bringing in Mike McCarthy, maybe upgrading the wide receiver position even a little bit more, maybe with a healthier offensive line, they can get him to take that next step. Again, he's a pretty young quarterback. He's only 26 years old. They believe with some better coaching, they can get him to that next level where, okay, now that he is being paid more, you know, a higher salary, he can carry a little bit more of the team rather than what maybe he did as a rookie or as a second-year player. So while you're certainly going to have to pay him more, I think a lot of people around the Cowboys organization are encouraged and optimistic about what Prescott is going to be into the future. All right, that is it for today's episode of the Ultimate NFC East Crossover Edition. Thank you guys for tuning in. Go ahead, guys, tell us where you can find your work. Plug your Twitter accounts for all the listeners out there.
You can find me at Patricia_Traina. And, of course, I'm the host of the Locked On Giants podcast. And you can find my written work on GiantsCountry.com, which is an SI.com sports channel.
Go ahead, Louie.
You can find me and, of course, our podcast on any platform, or we have our site, LockedOnEagles.com. And my written content is up at 97.3ESPN.com.
And I'm Chris Russell, host of the Locked On Redskins podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at WrestleMania621 or my podcast at Locked Redskins on Twitter as well. Read me RedskinsReport.com and listen to me on 106.7 The Fan and the Radio.com app throughout the Washington, D.C. area.
And I'm at Marcus_Mosier. You can follow the podcast at Locked On Cowboys. Make sure you follow my co-host, Landon McCool at McCoolBCB. On the next show on the Ultimate NFC East Crossover Edition podcast, we will be talking to Patricia about the New York Giants and what that new staff is going to look like under Joe Judge.